Thank
Hello,
you.
welcome back. As always, there will be spoilers, language, mature content, and more spoilers, especially this episode with the spoilers, because we have a special prediction segment that we're going to do at the very end in the highly anticipatory attitude of Fantastic Beasts: Crimes of Grindelwald coming out in like a month, less than a month. I
Less
think it
than.
comes out on the 16th of November. So
Yeah.
fucking get excited, people.
Yep, I'm
We will obviously have spoilers for everything in the realm of Harry Potter because this week's episode is kind of a palate cleanser of sorts. We just finished our first mini series, which was so exciting. It was phenomenal talking about the trio in depth. They are great characters. We love them dearly, but we noticed the episodes were getting a little long, which I think was fine. I think it was fine that they were a little long, because they're just it's just a long episodes. There's just a lot to cover.
Right.
So this one's gonna be fingers crossed, we're gonna wrap it up in 30 minutes. We will see. But we're gonna do like a lighter episode and just do a little bit of a Q&A. We are not drunk because it turns out that we're both adults and have to like do shit tomorrow. So
Yeah.
maybe some other time we'll do a drunk episode, but oh
Maybe.
well.
We'll see.
Delaney doesn't think it's as fun to get smashed as I do.
No, it's not. It's
Yeah.
not as fun. It's just
Boo.
that. So.
Anyways, just a little bit of a palate cleansing Q&A. We did have someone submit one of the questions for this Q&A, and in all future Q&As, which we'll do like every once in a while, I don't want to bore you guys to death with my structured opinions on Harry Potter questions. But we do enjoy answering questions that you guys have for us. So never
Yeah.
hesitate to submit that or send in content. We had someone send in some great Ron content for last episode. So we love interacting with you guys and we love seeing what you guys think about Harry Potter because obviously this podcast is from our point of view. And there's a lot more out there. So
Yep.
send it in.
Yes. Why'd you
I don't know.
yell? Why
I
did
don't
you
know. I
yell
think
all of
it's
a
because
sudden?
my face got like a little closer to the wall, so my mic picks it up. I'm back on the good mic this week. Oh, and you guys will be so excited to hear. I get to use the office this week. I don't have to be at the kitchen table. Yay. Also,
Yay.
the weather, we just had like a freak cold snap. It's like 35 degrees right now, so I do have a little bit of a stuffy nose going and a little phlegm. So that's why my
Yeah.
voice sounds like that. So fuck the weather in Tennessee. Because it was like
Yeah.
92 degrees and now it's 35 and might snow tonight. So,
Yeah.
boo.
And fuck the weather, Florida, because it was 70 and beautiful this morning, but my
Oh
allergies are
my
going
God, yeah.
nuts.
Yeah, so if we haven't already mentioned it, we don't record in the same place. And that's
No.
why, one, our recordings sound like this because we're using different microphones, and two, sometimes we talk over each other and it's because we don't know the other person's going to talk. So,
Yeah, it's a little hard
yeah.
to understand, like, if
It's
you're gonna
really hard to
talk
give
or
like
not.
visual cues when you can't see the other person. So, if you guys have ever wondered
Yeah.
why we are a little discombobulated, that's why. So, without
Yeah.
further ado, some corrections before we hop into what I think is going to be like a pretty good Q&A session, actually. But I guess some good ones.
Yes, we do. So, our first correction that I would like to speak to is from our last episode. I don't know if you guys remember, but Sarah and I had a little argument in the middle of the episode about if Crabbe was replaced in the last movie or not. And Sarah swore up and down that he was, and then lectured me about how recently have you watched the movies. Well, guess what, Sarah? You're
Okay,
wrong.
so
They did not replace Crabbe. It was Blaise Zabini, or
okay,
like I
so
say.
one, it's not Blaise in the books, but you guys know that. Two,
No, it isn't. No.
the actor was actually replaced. He was replaced with no one. And three, the last time I'd ever read anything regarding like what had happened in terms of that scene, because it's like a pretty big scene actually in the seventh.
Yeah, it is.
The article got released saying that they had just like replaced the actor, but it turns out that Crabbe's actor actually got into legal trouble and like couldn't come back to film.
Yeah.
And so they weren't going to address his legal issues because like it had just happened. And so they told
Yeah.
everyone that like they had just hugely overlooked the casting and made Crabbe black, basically. But it wasn't Crabbe. Now we know it
No.
wasn't Crabbe. So with the information I had, I was correct. But yes, no, it was Blazabini.
But you were so
which is incorrect. Hilarious because Blazabini is like the most unimportant human being in all of Harry Potter. But he gets good play in fanfic, which I think is hilarious. Everyone loves some Blazabini. He's like the Zachariah Smith of fanfic. Like totally not relevant.
Yeah.
Until you get to fanfic. Yep. But right. Yes. The other correction we have, for whatever reason, I was like, and Seven opens with an unbreakable vow. It doesn't. Half-Blood Prince opens with an unbreakable vow being made between Narcissa and Severus Snape. Seven opens with, I think it opens at the ministry. If it doesn't, it opens at the wedding. I don't remember how it opens. I think it might open at the Burrow. Oh, yeah, I know how it opens. It opens with them all leaving Privet Drive. What the fuck, Sarah? I just started rereading Seven. It's so good, guys. If you haven't read the books lately, they're so good. Anyways, I digress. Weekly Wizarding question of the week.
Mm-hmm. Weekly Wizarding question. Okay, so just to give a little background of like where this question is coming from, because it's a little out there. I was talking to my friend and we were talking about McGonagall's history and everything and how Dumbledore was her transfiguration teacher and then the head of the transfiguration department and all that. And he was one of the ones that helped her become an animagus. And we were talking and it was like, but wait, Dumbledore's not an animagus. Or at least we never know anything about him being one. And then we thought, well, what would Dumbledore's like animagus be? And I was like, oh, it'd be a phoenix. And then that led us to the question, which is, can an animagus turn into a magical creature? We see a stag, rat, cat, dog, but we don't see a phoenix or a thestral or anything like that. So that is my question.
So I might have an answer. I don't know what Dumbledore's is. I actually don't think it's ever, I don't think we have ever found out what his is. But I believe in terms of what you can become for an animagus, it's just like that of the Patronus. Mm-hmm. There is a wide variety of very generics, and then there is a much smaller percentage of the population that has what they would consider like a coveted, like rare creature. So like every once in a while, there are people who have a phoenix as their Patronus.
As their Patronus, but to turn it into a phoenix.
Well, so here's the problem with being an animagus. You do and don't inherit the innate properties and abilities of the animal. So, like, if you become an eagle, you can still fly. But I don't think that if you were to transform into a phoenix that you would have, like, the healing tears and that kind of stuff.
Well, I don't know. That's a question. That's like a separate question to this one. Is that, like, if you can turn into a magical creature, would you have those abilities? But the first one is, can you even turn into a magical creature at all?
I think so. I think it's just a very small subsection of the population.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would make sense. I'd be surprised if no one could turn into a magical creature, but, you know. Mm. So then I think Dumbledore's a phoenix.
Well, so I don't think that Dumbledore is a phoenix because Dumbledore becomes an animagus before he gets a phoenix. He doesn't actually get a phoenix until much later in his life. And I think at the point in which he actually gets one, he would have already gone through the process of being able to become an animagus. So,
well, yeah, but just because he doesn't have a phoenix yet doesn't mean he couldn't turn into a phoenix.
I don't think you but can anyway. Change once you become one. I don't think you have options after that.
Right. That's what I'm saying is that he didn't have to actually possess a phoenix to turn into a phoenix. So he could have turned into a phoenix long before he actually got Fox.
Yeah, I don't think so, but that's okay.
I mean, I'm just saying it's a possibility.
He is very fond of Fox. They are buddies. They're super buddies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Anyways.
Too far down a rabbit hole. If you guys can't tell, we're both like really tired. It's only like 9:45.
Yeah.
I'm so tired. Being an adult is so hard. Ugh.
And I stayed up till like 2 a.m.
I know. Before. I partied all weekend. Who am I?
I know. Same.
But without further ado, it is the host Q&A part 2. If you haven't listened to our first host Q&A, I think it was actually our first episode. And it was more of the generic Harry Potter questions. So you can find our houses, our wands, our Patronuses, all that jazz. This one's a little deeper. This is our deeper Q&A.
Yep.
So here we go. Yep. Question number one is kind of scary, I guess, but it's what would your Boggart be? I think it's a good question. I think people's conceptualization of their actual fears is very different than what their actual fears are. I think perceived versus reality for this one is very different. But I think that we both have answers that are pretty relevant and realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So mine would actually be the same as Molly Weasley's, which is like friends and family just like dead in front of you. That would tear me apart.
Yeah, I guess I just don't like my friends and family that much because it's not mine. In like real life, I don't have any particular like fears or phobias, like spiders, crashes, like none of that really bothers me. But the idea that I would be invisible, a mute, and unable to communicate or interact with people, but be a conscious reality is very scary for me.
True.
Which,
yep, terrifying.
Like, will never happen. So that's why it's, like, kind of hard to have that be a fear. But I just imagine roaming the world and being, like, just, it's total isolation at that point. So I don't like that.
Yeah.
That would be scary.
Yeah, that's a rough one. All right, next question. What is your favorite fan theory or the one you believe in the most? You can go ahead with yours.
So for both of us, we have like very in-depth fan theories. And
yeah, we're just going to talk on them.
We have decided to dedicate probably a series to fan theory because they're just so fan theory heavy. And I've mentioned one of mine before, and that is that Snape brewed Felix Felicius and took like a drop every day, and that's how he was able to maintain his double agent status without really much of an issue. Like, there were no true hiccups in his double agent life, which people they kind of forget that it's like almost 2 decades that he's playing a very realistic, very successful double agent. So I liked that one. And then this is actually something that was brought up on another Harry Potter like fan page that we're both on, and it's just that the trio and their group represent a reflection of the original kids, like the Marauders versus the trios, and then their extending friends are reflections of each other, but that it shows characteristical improvements from the Marauders to the Harry generation that have fixed the fatal flaws of each of the characters. And the breakdown is like nothing crazy, but obviously Harry is James, Ron is Sirius, Hermione is Remus, Neville is Peter, Ginny is Luna, or is Lily, and then Luna is Snape. And there's like obviously a lot to it, but it's basically that like these people worked through what the Marauder era people were not able to work through. So like Peter is unable to work through the fact that he's like kind of the whipping boy and becomes a terrible person because of it. But Neville, who could have easily been a coward, like rises above life's challenges and becomes a really great person. So just comparisons like that, which I really like. I don't know that that's like a fan theory. I don't think JK meant to write it like that necessarily, but I do like the duality that it shows for characters.
Yeah, I think that's cool. And mine, we've mentioned a little bit before, but mine's similar to that, where like I can see JK doing this on purpose, but it's also, if she didn't, it's a really cool like parallel that people try to find. But mine is that Dumbledore, Voldemort, Snape, and Harry mirror Death and the three brothers. So Dumbledore being Death, Voldemort being the elder brother, Snape being the middle brother who wanted the Resurrection Stone, and then Harry being the youngest brother. So Harry gets the cloak, obviously. Snape is all hung up over a dead person that he loved, just like the second brother. And then Voldemort wants power, just, you know, like the first brother. And then Dumbledore, he kind of is like another player in the whole thing, and he's Harry meets him as an equal at death and blah, 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 blah. But you get it. But that's, I like that parallel. It's kind of interesting.
I like the possibility that that's true. I could see her writing that as an actual thing. At the same time, I can see it being a very wild coincidence. So.
Right. Yeah, I could see either one of them.
Yeah.
And either one of them is cool to me that either she thought about it or somebody else was able to draw these parallels that maybe, you know, was meant to be there or not. But
anyway. Next is, what is the biggest plot hole in this series that you can't understand? There's so many. The more I read, I used to be a very staunch, like, JK defender. I still think that she's a great storyteller. I don't think she's a ridiculously talented writer, and not that her writing isn't eloquent and doesn't flow nicely, but she does have a bad habit of either introducing information that gets no resolution or just, like, plot holes that get completely ignored. And mine is the time turner, which I love as a plot device, and I love as a magical element, and I love that it enables Prisoner of Azkaban to end how it does, but I feel like it undoes the entire structure of the entire series, and obviously it gets brought back up in Cursed Child, and it does exactly what everyone feared that it could do as a plot hole, that it just undoes the entire fabric of the series. So I think of all the pieces she could have resurrected for Cursed Child or for any future spinoffs, that was her poorest choice. Because she does give resolution for that. In the books, in the original series, they're all destroyed by the Ministry for good reason. And then she's like, actually, there's this one they didn't find. And you're like, no, JK, like, put it down. Put the book down. Stop.
Well, I mean, she didn't write Cursed Child, but...
She signed off on the elements of her world in order to do it. She could have been like, yeah, let's not fucking do that. That's going to piss everyone off. And it did.
Yeah, so, and it did. It did. Mine is that James and Lily chose Peter as their secret keeper and not literally anybody else. Why the hell did they choose Peter? Literally.
I mean, I don't know that this is a plot hole because it is explained why they chose Peter in the books.
But that's not good enough. Like, literally, like, Sirius would die for you. Lupin would die for you. Dumbledore is powerful as shit. Literally,
well, the reason is because they felt like it would be very obvious to Voldemort to choose Sirius or Lupin or Dumbledore because of the closeness and the friendship that they actually had. So at the last minute, they changed it to someone that they thought Voldemort would never in a million years think to pick, which I think is perfectly logical reasoning. Like, Peter is the last person I would have chosen for them, but that's the exact reason that they chose him. Obviously, bad. Bad.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that constitutes a plot hole for me. I feel like she does explain that one, at least in a way that makes sense. It's not like a good choice, but I think it does make sense.
No. To me, it doesn't make sense because I get the saying, like, you know, like, oh, it'll be too obvious or whatever. But, like, yeah, but the man literally chose to turn into a rat. Like, if that's not foreshadowing, I don't know what is.
Yeah.
Anyways, that really bothers me because if I were in that situation, I'd be like, too fucking bad. We're choosing somebody that we know is not going to talk.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. So the next question, do you think Pottermore is canon or do you stand by death of an author, like, theory?
Oh, you cut out on that. If you guys couldn't hear, it's, do you think Pottermore is canon or do you stand by the death of an author theory? So I do and I don't. And I know that's, like, a really wishy-washy answer. The reason being, I used to feel like everything JK wrote was canon and that Pottermore was canon. Mm-hmm. And then she brought in a lot of outside writers. And so then it was just whatever she wrote on Pottermore was canon. But if someone else authored it, it wasn't canon. And I dislike a majority of her new info. And I feel like she's doing an excessive amount of back writing. And it's tough for me because not only she's still writing, but she's also writing new stories, which are going to operate within the same world, but are not necessarily super closely related. Like, the Fantastic Beasts series is obviously in the same world as the Harry Potter series, and there is overlap of characters, but the actual drive of the story do not necessarily overlap, and it leaves her room to fill in a lot of information from the original series in a pretty, like, conducive way. But at the same time, she does all this backwriting that I just think is too much. So
yeah,
I understand the concept of death of an author. I understand that it's all her series and anything she writes is by definition canon. But no, I if I had to pick, I'd say no. I don't think the Pottermore is canon.
And I'm opposite. I think that maybe not absolutely everything on there is canon, but I believe if JK wrote it, it's canon because it's her world. And that's pretty much how I feel. Whether I like her back writing or not, I do think it's canon. And the other thing too is that, like, just because it's canon doesn't mean that you have to like it or think that that's the best way to do it. It's just, it's canon. So yeah, no.
Ooh, good one. Who is the ultimate villain in the series?
So I would actually say the supporters of Voldemort, but not the radical ones, the ones that like follow out of fear. I think those are just truly dangerous people in general. The ones who follow evil because it's like the least resistance, or they know, but they still know that it's wrong. Those people are the ones that that scare me the most. And I noted here, wow, I'm a Gryffindor. Wow.
Yeah, and I can tell that I'm not a Gryffindor because although I think that people who blindly follow are dangerous, I don't think that everyone thinks that their side is necessarily wrong. One of the biggest parts about the main Wizarding War movement was that there are a lot of people that were on Voldemort's side that felt like their cause was just. I mean, and that.
Oh, I know.
That happens with everything. So everything is just so subjective in terms of like right and wrong. Mine.
Yeah.
I have two for this one. Barty Crouch Jr., I don't think he gets the appropriate applause for his performance as Moody or for what he actually does. He successfully infiltrates the Order of the Phoenix. He takes down one of the most paranoid, powerful wizards to live. He successfully operates as a double agent, and he also is a really good teacher. So I think that he's pretty scary. But my like OG total villain is probably also everyone's. It's Umbridge. And I think it's just because she truly thinks that what she's doing is right and that no one else could be right besides her. And then on top of all that, she's also got the backing of the federal government, which gives her like limitless power. And she has like some pretty red flag signs of personality disorders, which she's like unable to compose herself and cope rationally when she's confronted with the reality of what she's doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also just got like a sick personality. The quills that she uses that the students write lines with that give Harry the scars about not telling lies are a self-made creation. She made those to use on her staff originally. So she's just a fucked up individual.
Yeah. Oof. And like the fact that she like rationalizes using like the unforgivable spells just because she thinks her cause is just, that's terrifying. Yeah.
So she's bad.
All right, next question. Why do you think Dumbledore takes such an interest in Tom Riddle?
Because I think Dumbledore likes to play with fire. I think he saw potential in Dumbledore, but honestly, this is something that never made sense about the entirety of the story to me, and that is that Dumbledore was so invested in an orphan child that, like, at this point in time, this was in the 1960s, is that about right?
I think so.
And Hogwarts was full of students. Like, there was no shortage of wizards and witches. There were all sorts of people getting letters, and somehow this one child spoke to him, and he went and sought him out and recognized that he had the potential to be evil. And, like, we never see him take this sort of interest in a student again other than Harry, and I think he has a much better reason to be interested in Harry than he ever did in Tom Riddle. And I don't know if it's because Tom Riddle's family situation was, like, hot pressed in the wizarding world, and Dumbledore felt the need to do something, but this, honestly, it just never made sense to me that he took such a special, unique, personal interest in Tom Riddle.
Yeah, and I get the initial, like, confusion of, like, why he decided to go and take interest in this one child, but I think that after he meets him, it's easier to see why he took interest in him, like, great power and potential, but also I think we can all see from, like, the flashbacks and everything that he also has a potential to turn dark.
I think he was already dark.
I think he was born dark, but
I don't
I think Dumbledore saw like maybe this being an issue later on, so he wanted to like keep
an eye on him. It just never made sense to me because like Dumbledore never gave a shit about what Tom was actually doing. He didn't make a special concerted effort to like keep him on the path of right, and like he like brought him to Hogwarts, and then like he was just another student. So I don't like that. That's always bothered me. That's just one of those things. Oh, getting pumped up for Fantastic Beasts. Who's your favorite character from Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, movie series 1?
My favorite characters are either Jacob or Queenie. I love that Queenie just, like, doesn't give a shit about anybody else. And she'll read your mind if she doesn't care. I'm sorry. Like, I'm just doing it. But I think it's funny that she, like, doesn't hide her power sometimes and then does hide it from other people. And then, I think we maybe get to this later, but I feel like she has a lot of potential. She's one of the characters that has the most potential for like character development in the entire series. And Jacob is just awesome.
Jacob is great. I love Queenie and Jacob. I like that they're like, Queenie is talented, but she can be very subtle with it. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
They're literally the only characters I like. I didn't find Newt all that endearing. I didn't like Tina. They're like the only person I like was Grindelwald. I just wasn't a fan of the first movie. I've watched it a couple times since my first watching, and like the movie's more fun the more I watch it. I don't like the characters any more than I did the first time though. I am very excited though for all the characters coming up because I know I already love them. So
yeah, I'm excited. I actually very much enjoyed the movie, but I do agree. Tina, I feel like we were supposed to like Tina a lot more than we did.
I think that people have a hard time wrapping their head around why Tina is the way she is. Her situation is not, I didn't feel like her current position in life was fleshed out very well in the events that led up to it. And that makes her a little insufferable without understanding. So maybe we'll get a little more of it in the next movie. I highly doubt it because we're moving forward with the series. But
yeah, I highly doubt
it. Yeah, I just wasn't that big of a fan of it. I think I've said it before, but it just encompasses an area of magic that I don't give a shit about, and I just prefer the wizarding worlds in European countries, I guess.
All right, the next question, which I think is an interesting one. What does Amortentia smell like to you?
For those of you who don't know what Amortentia is, it is a love potion. It is the love potion that is brewed, I believe, in Half-Blood Prince by Slughorn, and it has a unique smell to every person. It smells to each person what is most appealing to them, so it varies person to person. And mine is fresh cut grass, autumn mornings, like those crisp ones where you walk outside and you're like, it's fall, and baking bread, yum. Nice. And maybe, but it's supposed to only have 3 smells. Hermione's has 4. By the way, if you've seen the movie, she only has 3. It's 4 in the book. But my other one would probably be like peppermint. I just love peppermint.
Oh, I love peppermint too. Yeah. So I put down mine as coffee, fall scented candles, especially Autumn Wreath by Yankee Candle. Hey. And fresh florals. And those things don't go together, I feel.
Which is okay. But they're not smells. It's not something that you would like bottle and put in a perfume. You get 3 distinct smells at once, not the smells together. So, Amortentia, it's a cool potion.
Yeah, it is cool. But I just feel like those 3 things are just very different. But anyways.
So, the next question, which flashback to Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, is what would you see in the mirror of Erised?
And it's going to get morbid real quick. But me, it would be myself, like, at a very elderly age, like, close to death, and then being happy with what I've accomplished in my life, not having, like, really any regrets, knowing that I live my life to a full extent on my own terms, and not being afraid of death.
I'll just pick one, Delaney.
Well, that's what it is. It's not one thing.
No. Okay, so if you guys don't remember, in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Harry stumbles into a room where this mirror is his first year, and he sees his parents in it. And the next night he brings Ron back because he wants to be like, hey, meet my parents. And Ron sees something different in the mirror, and he think he's head boy, and he's won the house or the Quidditch Cup, and he's like shaking hands with Dumbledore. And this is the moment after that Dumbledore like obviously knows they're looking in it. And this is the one time that Dumbledore ever lies to Harry. Obviously, he omits a ton, but this is a flat-out lie because Harry asks him what he sees, and Dumbledore says, a nice pair of socks. And in book seven, when they're basically going through his will and they're finally giving Harry, Ron, and Hermione what was bequeathed to them by Dumbledore, Harry's mind flashes back to this exact moment. But mine is my family, probably mostly just my parents, openly acknowledging that they're proud of me and think I've made like good choices in my life, which sounds sad, but if you knew my family, it would make sense. So
yeah. So that's a sad
question. Anyways.
Okay. Moving on. I don't know why. Like, a lot of people would, like, choose, like, super happy things.
I've won the lottery. Like, no, I don't care about the lottery. I want my parents to love me.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to be afraid of death. Like, Jesus. Okay. Next question, moving on. Did your opinion of Dumbledore change after the last book/movie?
Yes, kind of, sort of. I still think that Dumbledore in the context of Harry Potter series did not handle things well, and just in general, like, kind of like to play with fire, kind of like to see how things would play out, kind of like to put people in situations to see what choices they would make because it was fun. But that being said, in Deathly Hallows, he did kind of wrap up a lot of loose ends that proved to me, at least, that he had a little purposeful intent with what he was doing, that he was planning things, that he had a little foresight, and that he understood people. Like, his, just even with what he gave people in his will, I think showed that he did actually have interpersonal skills more advanced than, like, his quirkiness. And he gives things to people that they needed and that he knew they would need that didn't make sense until the moment of need. So that showed some, like, purposeful intent for me. In general, though, no, I still think that he's just a weird dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I wouldn't say that my opinion of Dumbledore necessarily changed. I do agree with the fact that, like, in the seventh book, like, once we figure out, like, all the things he left and, like, what they're for, it does make him less of a cuckoo old man and, like, a little bit more of, like, oh shit, he wise. But for me, it was more of just, like, my opinion of, like, his history and character development did. Like, his family history and his, like, younger Dumbledore life was very different than what we know. So that was interesting. Yeah, we can. But my opinion of older Dumbledore.
Yeah, we get our first glimpse of young Dumbledore in, I think we don't get it until Deathly Hallows, actually. But
no, yeah,
and it's Deathly Hallows. Even then, we just get, like, one side of the story from multiple point of views, and it, like, none of it is an actual, you know, all-telling tale of it. So hyped.
Yes, so I'm hyped. So excited. Oh, God.
So our last question before we get into our predictions is, which minor and or mid-level character, basically just not one of the main characters, do you think would make the best spin-off movies and books? Obviously, we have our first spin-off series, and we had our first spin-off book in Cursed Child, and then we had our first spin-off series that started, and we're about to get the second movie, and it's all based around, so honestly, just like the randomest person you could choose. He's mentioned once in the first book.
Yeah.
But
so who would you
choose?
Sorry,
I'm choking on a pill right now.
Didn't do that.
I didn't have enough water. I would choose a couple people. I think firstly, the founders. Like, to have a founders series, just because there just has to be so much to say about them. Secondly,
I agree,
is the Marauders. They're just characters that we love. And obviously we know some of their life. It'd be nice to know more of their life. We get just snippets of what is actually a very holistic view of people. So third would be McGonagall, just like as anything, because she's just so awesome. And then, you know, if you have time to do a short series on Netflix, Madame Pomfrey, I don't know. She just does a really good job with like everything.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Mine are, I think everybody really says the Marauders and the Founders.
Yeah, why not?
But I totally agree that McGonagall would be an incredible story. Either like her backstory, which we know a little bit about from JK's like writing recently, or her just as a headmistress. It would be...
It'd be good. Ooh. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, she was an excessively talented Quidditch player back in her day.
Yeah.
And her career was derailed when she had a really bad injury that prohibits her from flying anymore. So that's kind of sad. Yeah. But yeah, she's awesome. She's badass.
And like her romantic history is interesting too. I'd like to see that and her family history.
She's
like
married, guys.
She was married for a really
long time. She was married, but yeah, she had, there was a Mr. McGonagall.
Yeah, there was for like 3 years and then he
tragic.
Died.
Tragic.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are all the questions we have for this particular episode. Cause we're trying to keep it short. We're already over 30 minutes. So I have lied to everyone,
damn it,
but that's okay. So just real quick, we want to throw in our Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald predictions. Obviously, at this point in time, one, we're patiently waiting for the movie to come out, and two, we have all of the trailers. So pretty much all of the information that we're ever going to have before we actually watch it is available. So there are a couple things that we know happen. One, we meet Grindelwald as a teenager. Two, we meet Dumbledore as a teenager. Three, Nagini is a person.
Is a person, yes. That's a big
Nagini one. Is a person. If you guys don't know that by now, you have not been paying attention.
Yeah.
And we meet Newt's brother. I think that's kind of the gist of what we know.
What's her face? The lady that Newt was in love with. She makes an appearance as well.
Starts with an L.
Lita Lestrange.
There you go. So that's what we know. So my predictions are. Oh, and we know that Dumbledore and Grindelwald were together. JK has said that we're going to get their romantic history, which is kind of one of Delaney's points, but we know that. We know that. So mine.
You said that, and then like.
Yeah. But so anyways, mine are. Mm-hmm. And so in the trailers, Dumbledore says, "Hey, Newt, you have to do this because I can't move on Grindelwald," which makes me think. They make an unbreakable vow to not, like, kill each other. Because we know from the Harry Potter series that they, like, got into some weird wizarding shit together. So I think they've made an unbreakable vow that somehow stipulates they can't kill each other. And that Grindelwald, I think Grindelwald tricked Dumbledore into doing it because I think Dumbledore was in love with him. And Grindelwald just did it for power. My second one is that I think Credence and... the woman that plays Nagini, whose name I can't remember right now, get together. And then three, I think that Newt and his brother, who we know is going to come into play, have their relationship. Their relationship's already poor in the first Fantastic Beasts, and that's because, I think they say this, but Newt's brother marries someone that Newt was in love with. So that's awkward. So I think their relationship crumbles over a girl who... we will see. But it is a member of the Lestrange family.
Yeah, it's Lita Lestrange, right? Yeah.
So those are my predictions. I'm sure there will be all sorts of other cool shit. And I guess maybe we'll get some Voldemort hints from Nagini.
Yeah, possibly.
Okay, that's my prediction.
Yeah, and my prediction, I know that JK has said that Dumbledore and Grindelwald have a romantic relationship and that we're going to get their history, but I really do think there's going to be more emphasis on their romantic history than a lot of people are expecting. I don't think she's going to shy away from that. It's something that she's kind of pushed on, so I think we're going to get some of that very openly in this movie. So that's one prediction. I don't think they're going to dance around it. And then my other prediction is that I'm like 100% sure this is a thing. I think we're going to find out that Ariana Dumbledore is an obscurus.
I agree with that. And when I saw the first, this is the only good thing that came out of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them for me. When I saw that obscurus were a thing and then saw how it manifested in Credence, I was like, oh, Ariana was an obscurus. That's literally the first thing I thought. If you guys don't know what an obscurus is, it's basically a magical child who has to repress their powers, and it manifests by, in most cases, breaking out of the human form and being like a ball of energy that's very destructive and dies super young. And Credence, who we meet in the first movie, is an obscurus who's lived to an abnormally long age. And I'm sure he'll be some sort of a power pawn between Grindelwald and like everyone else. We thought, we're led to believe that Credence dies in the first movie. But if you right. remember, there's like a little tiny piece of him that flits away and Newt protects him. So hopefully Credence doesn't kill everyone.
Yeah. And I agree with all of your predictions as well. But yeah, my one that I know is going to happen. Like, it's not even a prediction. It's just, it's happening. She's
yeah. So here. Basically we're going to be super sad if she's not. Cause then what the fuck is she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally. Like, it's going to be like, that doesn't make, it's not going to make any sense. No. If she isn't. Ugh. But
we would love to hear your Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald predictions. And you can do this through so many ways. We are on Insta, we're on Twitter, we are on Reddit, and you can email us on Instagram, Lumos Maxima Podcast, DM us or comment on our pics. We try to upload when we upload episodes. Twitter is Lumos Maxima Pod. We put polls up on there and we tweet JK all the time. She never responds. You can email us long predictions or whatever you want. You could just chat to us at lumosmaximapodcast@gmail.com. If you listen on a platform like Apple Podcasts that allows you to rate, review, and subscribe, we would adore it if you would do that. We have mm-hmm. 5 ratings and reviews right now, so we would like to double that by midnight. So get on it. get on it, guys. We have no clue what next week's episode is going to be. We've got like a whole slew of things we could do. I don't know what we're going to be feeling. But as always, if yeah. you have topics that you want us to discuss or that you want our input on, let us know. You can reach us on all the aforementioned social medias.
Please.
This has, oh, I'm dropping stuff. This has been fun. I'm going to go ice my hand. I got in a bar fight last night, so I have to go ice my hand. I'm sorry. I know.
We're adults.
I know. I'm too old for this, guys. But that is going to wrap this episode up. We did not keep it under 30 minutes.
I don't think we ever did.
Yeah, but you're welcome for bonus content. And we will talk to you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.